Hey, good morning. Welcome to Your Turn. I'm Mike Causey, and glad to have you with us today. We always try to follow the money on this show here on Your Turn, but today more than ever, maybe, because we're going to be talking exclusively about phased retirement, unless you want to call in and ask something else. And I have one of the world's leading authorities here on it, Bob Braunstein. Bob works with the National Institutes of Transition Planning. He is a former Fed, a retired Fed. He has been through a kind of a phased retirement. Wanted to ask him about that. And this thing is a brave new world. The government has never had anything quite like this. And as we've talked about in previous shows, you know, in the private sector, when you say we're going to have something like phased retirement, you just say, okay, Larry, you work 20 hours a week for the next 6 months. Georgia, you work with him, you be mentored, and then away you go. And the government doesn't work that way. There are rules, regulations, laws that must be followed, all manner of things. That the devil truly is in the details. And we're very, very close to phased retirement, but not quite there yet. So remember, we have Bob Braunstein. He is an authority on this. And that is saying something, because there are not many out there. And Bobby, you've been working with Tammy Flanagan on this issue as well. I know Tammy has done some shows with the National Institutes of Transition Planning, Bob Lyons Group. So first off, welcome to the show. Thank you for coming down. And I know you're visiting from Florida. You came up here to escape the heat, did you?
No, I did. Actually, I'm up here for a few months because I'm doing some additional work up here too.
Okay.
So that's sort of reverse snowbirding.
Oh, good. Yeah. Well, that's right. A lot of people do that. What's your background in the government?
Well, I worked for the government quite a few years ago. I was always in HR. My first federal position, I was actually a retirement counselor way back in 1970.
As a young guy.
Yeah, I was 22 years old. Mm-hmm. And I was in benefits for about 4 or 5 years, and then, you know, made the gradual transition to staffing and classification, went through a whole career. And then I took an early out with a buyout back when HR was being downsized. This was in the mid-90s. You mentioned before that I sort of took a phased retirement. For me, it was, all right, make a decision to leave early and then kind of go figure out what you want to do. Now, I had a buyout. I had lump sum annual leave payment. So I had stuff to tide me over. But, of course, I was taking about 50% pay into retirement with benefits. Had young children, had to do something else. You know, it's a brave new world now, because you don't really have to take the plunge that quickly. In my case, had to make the decision to go and then reset what I was going to do, you know, within the next 6 or 7 months. I was able to do that. I felt confident I can do that. But for folks who are a little tentative about it, this is a win-win situation. If you're given an opportunity to take a phased retirement, essentially you don't really sever the umbilical cord. You can stay with the government, get a lot of the government benefits along the way, and at the same time, you can explore life on the outside, and you have the opportunity to, as you, like you said, help people who are going to take your place.
Well, when I was a very young reporter at the Washington Post, we did not have a retirement plan. Mm-hmm. They did not have a retirement plan.
That
period,
was a long
until
time
1973. Uh-huh. I mean, the idea was, in those days, you worked for a newspaper. And you grew up and got a real job and left. There was nobody career. That said, there were some people that hung around forever. And I remember I used to hear the old codgers, guys in their 50s, talking about...
Younger than I am now,
they didn't
yes.
know what to do. They were going to do with themselves in retirement. And I thought, I know what I'm going to do. I'll be at Ocean City, surf's up, we'll be out there. Well, of course, you grow up and you realize it's not going to be that way. But I have read anecdotally that a lot of people, they don't necessarily want to retire. They just want to work less, put in less time. So this is tailor-made for them.
Oh, I agree. And, you know, retirement of any kind is an emotional transition. And,
yeah.
and many folks who think they're not going to do anything are going to be rudely awakened. I mean, it's really important to add value. I mean, you don't have to be gainfully employed, but you want to be doing something that makes you feel good.
Well, I don't know how many times I've talked with people who were retirement professionals. They're financial planners, they're sociologists, what have you, and they say, don't retire from something, retire to something, even if it's a hobby. But
excellent advice.
Yeah,
absolutely correct.
So I guess one of the first questions here, this is from Josephine with the Health and Human Services. She said, when is it likely that phased retirement will actually be available? Do regulations need to be written first? I'm planning on going at the end of the year, but would hang in there a little longer if it looked like it might be available soon. Thanks.
Well, the regs are actually written. They were published in the Federal Register. There's a comment period ongoing as we speak, which is scheduled to end on August 5th, I believe. Once the comments are assimilated, I guess there'll be some final tweaks made, but I would anticipate seeing implementation of this in federal organizations probably by the end of the fiscal year, if not sooner. Agencies will have it in their authority to use this program as they want to. Again, you know, in Josephine's situation, the question is, is she in a situation where an agency would give her an offer to go into a phased retirement scenario? Like you aptly said, it's not an entitlement. It really depends upon the employee, the organization, the type of job they're in, and whether it really is a match.
I remember when the buyouts first began in the 1990s, a lot of people said, I'm going to go into the boss and get a buyout. Well, it doesn't work that way.
No.
It is, as you said, it's an entitlement, and it has to work for the agency.
Absolutely.
And for the boss.
It's really strategic all the way down the line. Is it going to be win-win for everybody? Is the agency losing institutional knowledge because you're leaving?
Yeah.
They need to retain you longer so that you can train other people. If you don't fit that mold, not all jobs do, then chances are you won't get an offer to do a phased retirement.
Well, you know, in the late 1990s, I think the year it was 1999, the media started this drumbeat about a retirement tsunami, and it caught on, and it became a cottage industry here in Washington. Groups were set up and studies and committees, and they were all talking about poor old Uncle Sam would be an idiot child in no time, but as people who had the institutional memory and the knowledge retired in these great ways. Well, it hasn't happened.
Mm-hmm.
There have been dribs and drabs here. There have been heavy months, but by and large, it hasn't happened. But it I guess it is inevitable. The numbers are there. Nobody's getting any younger. This huge lump of people that's beyond retirement age now. So could this mitigate that?
I think it could. Like you said, it hasn't happened yet. I think some of that was economically driven. I mean, when the market crashed mm-hmm. in 2008,
right.
It scared a lot of people, and they stuck around a little bit longer. But the baby boom generation, 79 million strong, not all of them in government, of course, I mean, continues to be the driver. And you got a lot of folks in government who are eligible to go, and I think they will be thinking more and more about pulling the plug now, but they can do it more gradually. So this could very well be impetus, because like I say, if you're not having to sever your ties and you can, you know, basically test the waters as a retiree, sometimes that's just more attractive. I mean, it's you definitely maintain your network of folks that you work with. It's not as scary. And again, for organizations, I think it's definitely a win because they maintain, you know, your knowledge, and you can help the folks who are going to take your place.
Yeah, because going cold turkey after working 30 or 40 years, I imagine could be an amazing jolt. And, you know, you sleep late for 6 days, and then you start confusing Saturdays with Wednesdays. And so this is not a bad thing. Here's a question from
sure.
Stan. It says, good morning, Mike. Glad to have you back from vacation. My question is, or your guest is, as an employee under the CSRS system, by continuing work under a phased retire, can I continue making contributions into the voluntary contributions program? That's a new one.
Mm-hmm.
Open to CSRS employees, or must I take final action, withdrawal, rollover, etc., when I go into the phased retirement, the same as if I was retiring, leaving government service? For people who aren't aware of the voluntary contributions, it's been out there forever. It's still not well known. But if you're under the old CSRS system, and correct me if I'm wrong, you can contribute up to, what is it,
10%
of your
right.
lifetime federal, which most of us don't have.
Mm-hmm.
But if you've made $1 million over the year, you can contribute $100,000 to this. It used to have a superb investment rate, a return rate, not so good now. But it's many people say it's the best thing in the world. It's the equivalent of a government-backed CD. You know, it's totally
right.
available only to CSRS people, and many of them use it to supplement their income. Very few use it to buy an annuity, but it is a perk. And if you hit the lottery,
sure,
coming with a lot of money, it's a great deal.
The great thing about it now is with the advent of Roth
yes.
IRAs, you know, this is a retirement repository or receptacle that makes that amount of money eligible for rollover to a Roth.
Okay, so better deal than ever.
It is, and there are no income restrictions
right.
with respect to the rollover, where there usually is as far as actually being able to contribute to one. So voluntary contributions are great.
Take a short break here on Federal News Radio. I'll be right back talking with Bob Bronstein about phased retirement.
Hello, my name is Bill Kurtz, Vice President of Federal Sales at RSA, the security division of EMC. I've worked with countless federal information security organizations over the years to know that a business-as-usual approach is no longer an option. Whether you are looking to efficiently manage the continuous monitoring of security controls or trying to demonstrate FISMA compliance, the new RSA Archer Federal Solutions can help solve your biggest challenges.
To learn more about the new RSA Archer Federal Solutions, contact your federal RSA account manager or authorized RSA reseller today.
Buried in contracts that need to be awarded, pressured by urgent deadlines and tight budgets, Integrity Management Consulting Single Award GSA BPA makes it easy to relieve the stress. Integrity delivers credentialed acquisition professionals who have the experience to deal with today's challenges. Choose a partner who gives you the exact support you need, when and where you need it, nationwide. Take the pressure off by working with Integrity. Learn more at consultwithintegrity.com.
How does your office celebrate a win? Hugs? High fives? Somebody makes an awkward speech, but somehow it works? However you do it, it feels great, because it's a win. Every day there are celebrations across America by government agencies, commercial businesses, and healthcare companies. Some of them celebrate saving money, some of them celebrate saving lives. Force 3 is here to help them celebrate faster by enhancing the way their people conduct business, whether it's using virtualization technologies, new storage strategies, or ingenious network solutions. If you're interested in today's most advanced technology solutions, or if you just want to meet people that are doing great things, visit Force3.com. Force 3, let's do something great. Force 3 is a Cisco Gold partner and one of the largest providers of Cisco to the federal government. Visit Force3.com to find out more about our leading technologies.
Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, sponsored by AT&T, every Tuesday morning at 11 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk has the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Check out the world of high technology in the federal government as John speaks to CISOs, CTOs, and CIOs and gets into the specifics for federal IT systems integrators. Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, sponsored by AT&T, Tuesday mornings at 11 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Be a part of the USO of Metropolitan Washington's annual Stars and Stripes business-to-business networking event and fundraiser for the troops on October 4th at the Sheraton National Hotel in Arlington. Mingle with top corporate executives and celebrities, nosh on great food, and bid on amazing auction items. Join in as the USO Metro announces the 2013 Circle of Stars, honoring the top corporate donors for the year. Event sponsorships are still available. To learn more, visit WTOP.com, search charities.
Legal mistakes can be costly. Whether it's a business contract or dispute, a family situation or property, Power of Attorney covers all that and more. This Saturday at 10 a.m., join the attorneys from Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman and learn the latest legal developments affecting businesses and individuals. Power of Attorney is sponsored by Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman, a full-service law firm taking pride in working together with our clients, fully invested in their success. Visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
For over a century, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington has served the youth in our nation's capital. The club's new STEAM initiative uses the arts to teach science, technology, engineering, and math. Today, more than ever, we need your support of STEAM. It will encourage our youth to think rather than memorize, create rather than copy, and to be resourceful rather than reserved. So visit boysandgirlsclubs.org. Send a dollar or more as an investment to help us help our kids pick up STEAM. Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, great futures start here.
This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
Hey, welcome back to Your Turn, Mike Causey. Glad to have you with us. And I'm talking with Bill Bronstein today. I always want to call you Roy. I'm going to ask you later on about
that. Really, because, Bob.
Well, you know what's funny? When I was younger, people often called me William, Bill, which was my father and grandfather's name, or Wayne, because there was a Wayne Causey baseball player. So we beat him up that. But I have always thought of you as a Roy, and I wondered if
I look like a Roy.
Something in your
just
past.
Don't call me late for dinner. Thank
All right,
you.
Good deal. So Bob Bronstein,
yes,
here, and we're talking about phased retirement. It is coming up. He said the regs are being written even as we speak. The comment period is out there. And the question was from an Army civilian, Stan, who wanted to know about the voluntary contributions program. So explain what that was. How is it affected? And he signed this, the door is open to retire. But is the voluntary contributions plan, has that been factored into this phased retirement?
You know, when I read through the Federal Register's publication, I didn't see specific mention of voluntary contributions. But one of the things to remember is that when you're in phased retirement, you're still an employee. You can make contributions to TSP. I can't imagine that you wouldn't be able to do contributions to the voluntary fund as a CSRS person. Again, I haven't seen anything specifically that addresses it, but you should be able to do it.
Right, because that's just money from any source, provided it's no more than 10% of your lifetime federal service.
And it does not have to come from your biweekly payroll withholding like TSP does.
So you literally win the lottery or come into an inheritance, take that money
and put
loan.
Do whatever you can.
Good. Here's one from Heather with the, she doesn't say, says, I've been watching the news on this very closely. I have two questions. Is there a timeline for agencies to implement this program? Will it apply to Foreign Service officers? I am currently assigned to D.C., not overseas. I am in the FSPS system. That's Foreign Service Personnel System.
Right.
What about that?
Not sure about what the State Department's going to do. Again, it's probably better to answer a question like that by backing into who isn't eligible to be in it.
Okay.
And it's really, as long as you're subject or if you're eligible for immediate retirement and you've been a full-time employee for the last 3 years and you're not subject to an age-based retirement or like mandatory for law enforcement, air traffic controllers, or minimum retirement age plus 10. As long as you're, say, if you're CSRS 55 with 30 years, or if you have 60 years, if you're 60 years of age, 20 years of service, eligible for immediate retirement. Technically, your organization could make that offer to you. You've got to meet those background qualifications. Now, again, whether state intends to go ahead with phased retirement, whether they think it's something they can do. It's up to the organization to offer the program. They're not going to offer it to everybody. It's a question of whether it's a fit for them, whether it's a fit for the person who's leaving. So a lot of these are unknowns. I haven't seen specific mention of Foreign Service, but again, they're federal organizations, and the enabling legislation and regulations are out there pretty much for agencies to use ultimately.
You know what this reminds me of? Way, way back in time, the government started experimenting with a four-day week. And they were going to, they thought it would better serve the public. It didn't work. By and large, it did not work. But one of the toughest problems they had was convincing employees that while this may be a good thing for you, this is not designed for you. This is designed for the public. This is so that Social Security offices can be kept open on Saturdays or can be kept, have longer hours. So it's not about you. And I suspect this phased retirement is something like that. It may benefit you tremendously. It may benefit older people who want to go out, the middle career people who are in the promotion pipeline, and the younger people who will be mentored. But it's not necessarily about you.
I couldn't agree with you more. It's definitely preemptive and smart thinking on the part of the federal government and OPM to go out there and do this, given the age wave that we're talking about, this possible retirement tsunami and the outflow of institutional knowledge. It's a great way to keep that, you know, at more of a trickle than a wave.
I imagine AFSA, the American Foreign Service Association, is very keenly interested in this and is probably pushing state to implement this. State has a slightly different system, and they have the kind of the up or out promotion system. But it would certainly fit there if it works out as part of their overall plan. Here's one from Tony in Merrifield. He's a postal worker. Says there's a large retirement processing backlog, which phased retirements taken in large numbers would increase. Has OPM indicated they would process phased retirements ahead of full retirements to make the program an early success? Very interesting question. It's related. Does OPM just process retirements first in, first out the door, or does it sort them to complete simple ones first, continuous service, one agency, et cetera? Good questions.
Yeah, it is good. Yeah, the backlog to which he's referring is actually being whittled down quite handily by OPM. Anticipated that it's probably going to be gone, hopefully, by the end of the year. They had quite a few cases, up to 60,000, I think, backlogged at one point in time, but they're getting through those, and it's anticipated that most of that should be gone. processing retirements generally, if the agency has done its work well, usually there's about a three-month adjudication period. Once you leave, you get partial checks from OPM for about 3 months. Then you finally get a full check with all the back pay that they owe you and so on. That should be returning to normalcy pretty soon. And then phased retirements, it makes sense to process those quickly, and it's an easier calculation because you're only looking at calculating half the annuity. We're not adding the sick leave. A variety of things that we do when we finalize retirements make this a little bit more simple, plus the fact the employee is still technically working for the government. So it's not going to be as difficult to do these things as it would be a full retirement. There are a lot of loose ends that don't get tied together until the person is fully retired.
Well, the fly in the ointment is that OPM made processing these claims a priority at the same time the Postal Service was offering a large number of both buyouts and early retirements. Few other agencies added to that flow, so you had the retirement tsunami, the regular age-driven people, mm-hmm. plus the ones who are taking buyouts or early outs. And at the same time, along comes sequestration, and they had to eliminate overtime at OPM. So mm-hmm. apparently they're almost back to square one. They have more applications than ever before, not a record number, but more than ever before, and or more than often is the case, and yet they can't do this with overtime.
Yeah, they had a big spike. I guess back in February they were anticipating 5,000 or 6,000 retirements, and it came up to about 20,000 or so. But they also hired more staff, and they've been really focusing heavily on getting the backlog down. And the reports that I'm reading is they've been making great progress. So for folks who are really worried about this, you know, who are going to be retiring regularly, I wouldn't see phased retirement processing being moved to the front of the line as necessarily something that's going to bollocks up the works with regard to a regular retirement.
Right. And the thing about this delay is many people, when they retire, the government estimates their annuity, OPM does, and then gives them something like 80% of it, which most people can get by on.
Right.
And then eventually you're made whole again, and you get retroactive payments and all that sort of thing.
And you get a lump sum annual leave payment. You can use that to tide you over.
Right. The problem is in these people, and we've all heard them, and I've talked to my colleagues at the Federal Times and other places, Washington Post, we've all heard from people who were put on 40% of their estimated annuity. And for them, that means cashing in the TSP. That means mm-hmm. borrowing to make the mortgage or the rent. And that is a real hardship. And if it goes on for a year, that's a major blow.
That's a rare situation. It's usually because there's a complex service history, missing data, or they might even be what's called a FERCA case. You know, they're in the wrong retirement plan, and they're in a six-month election window to pick the old plan or the new plan.
Yeah, okay. Here's one from Nuke at NASA, and he says, I've been pondering requesting a phased retirement when my time comes. I've read a lot of info about phased retirement online. My particular scenario has not been addressed in anything I have found so far. Perhaps Bob can help. I am now and always have been under FERS. That's the relatively newer retirement system. I'd like to transition to a phased retirement after 30 years of service and then stay on for another 2 years of phased retirement. During those 2 years, I will turn 62. My question is, how much, if any, of my service years will be subject to the 1.1% rule for calculating the retirement annuity pension of those retiring after age 62 under FERS, as opposed to the normal 1% of service for those retiring before age 62. My guess, I hope, is half of the years of service before phased retirement, plus the extra time served under the phased retirement, or in my case, 15 plus years, will get the 10% boost.
Wow.
I'm so glad you're here.
It's a great question.
I'm leaving.
Interesting.
I'm leaving now.
He's got half of his retirement coming in right now if he goes into phased retirement. And obviously, not being 62, then we're looking in the general formula of FERS, each year counts at 1%. So it would be 1% for each year times your high three average, and then you get half of that. The final calculation that's made when you retire adds your sick leave and then calculates the retirement as if you were never even in part-time status or half-time status. It says, all right, if you'd retired this day in earnest without even going through this phase period, here's what you'd have. So if you're 62 with 30 years of service, each year would count at 1.1% because you only need 20 to get that. It'd be 33% times the high three. But here's the kicker. We take that figure, that ultimate figure, and we cut that in half too. And then we add the two halves together. So it's possible that that first half of retirement that you got in phased situation, obviously, was not based on the 1.1%. It's based on the 1% because you're not 62 yet. When we do the ultimate calculation, once again, it's like we do a full retirement calculation as if you'd never been phased to begin with, but we cut that in half. We add the two halves together. It's more than it would have been than before, but if you'd stayed as a full-time employee, it's a tough situation. My sense, based on what I've read, is that the phased period would be, you know, what it's phased for when you retire. But when you ultimately retire, it's the look back, looks at all of the service, applies the 1.1%, but then divides the whole thing in half.
0.1% doesn't sound like a lot of money.
It's 10%.
Okay. And so could you give a dollar example of
sure.
how this might
if
work?
If your annuity under normal circumstances, let's say I'm retiring, I've reached minimum retirement age, FERS, I've got my 30 years in, and my annuity, let's just pick a round figure, it's going to be $30,000, 1% for each year. Because you know, my high three was $100,000. Mm-hmm. If I was 62 and retired with that total, it would be 1.1% times my high three, or it would give me $33,000 a year as opposed to 30. So it's a 10% boost to the unreduced annuity total. Unreduced meaning the gross annuity before we take taxes out, survivor benefits, health insurance, and all of those.
So that's significant, especially when you consider COLAs, cost of living adjustments, are figured in. Even if, in the case of FERS, if they're reduced slightly, it's still a living, breathing creature. $3,000 more a year.
Yeah. Now, of course, if you don't get the 1.1% when you retire under regular FERS, say MRA 30, but you also get something called the FERS annuity supplement, which is that bridge to Social Security, which at 62 you wouldn't be entitled to get because you're eligible for Social Security.
All right, need to take a short break here, but we'll be right back talking about phased retirement. Still have a lot of questions to be answered.
The Information Management Minute, provided by Iron Mountain.
The Presidential Directive on Records Management requires federal agencies to designate a senior agency official to oversee review of their records program. NARA will oversee the SAO's actions against the directive. These officials have been identified from various functional areas, including records management, finance, operations, legal, and information technology. This cross-functional approach should help necessary insights surface and help industry work with government to modernize its approach to paper and electronic records keeping.
Is your agency looking to realize better efficiencies and cost savings through a proven information management program? Iron Mountain stores and protects billions of information assets, including paper records, backup tapes, electronic files, and medical data, helping federal agencies manage their entire information lifecycle. Learn more at ironmountain.com/radio.
Here's Zach Goldstein, Deputy CIO NOAA, on the Federal Executive Forum on Big Data, sponsored by HP.
Growing the economy through the reuse of our data.
Right.
So we already see it happening now with the insurance industry. There's a multi-billion dollar weather industry, AccuWeather, the Weather Channel. They don't have their own satellites. They don't have their own radars. Those are owned by the American people. But look at the industry and look at the economy that's grown from that. That'll be even more so.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Data is coming at us at speeds we can't even measure. Everything we do depends on it, capturing data, transforming that data into information, then into actionable knowledge. The future belongs to those who can harness and use this data to analyze, improve, and better serve their workforce and constituents. HP is ready to help agencies convert information into actionable intelligence that drive faster and more informed decisions for government. Make it matter. Learn more at hp.com/go/big data.
The awards and opportunities of modernizing federal IT networks. A panel discussion with experts from government and industry, sponsored by Brocade. And now panelist Anthony Robbins, Vice President of Federal for Brocade.
Better utilization of commercial best practices is really important. And if you think about what GSA said in their networks 2020, they're talking about standardization. There is no place in a government's IT environment today where standardization is either less employed or a bigger opportunity than in the government's network infrastructure. So that's a big deal. I believe that the whole standardization movement actually allowed virtualization to happen in the data center. And I believe that that same opportunity exists for the government's network infrastructure. So commercial best practices as it relates to standardization is a big deal.
Join federal IT executives at the 2013 Federal Forum hosted by Brocade as they share their insights and best practices on how to implement and manage federal agency networks of the future. August 6th at the Ronald Reagan Building. Register today at federalforum2013.com.
Hi, everybody. It's David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast, the D.C. area's one and only food and wine variety show. Tune in next Sunday and every Sunday at 11 right here on 1500 and 820 a.m. to hear the latest from the food and wine scene. We've got celebrity chefs, sommeliers, winemakers, and more all here to tell you about the inside skinny that you won't find anywhere else. That's Foodie and the Beast this Sunday at 11.
Heavy rains, like we've had recently, run off hard surfaces in urban areas, causing erosion and pollution in nearby streams that ultimately connect with the Chesapeake Bay. In areas planning major redevelopment, like Tyson's Corner, Ted Scott of Stormwater Maintenance and Consulting thinks there's a golden opportunity.
It's possible to have the project enhance water quality as compared to what's been there for years.
Scott says planting vegetation on specially engineered soil between urban and natural areas can allow water to seep underground and remove pollutants.
Little things like this have a significant impact as long as a lot of them happen.
Scott adds such planning must be made early because it involves
not only different ways of designing stormwater practices, but how the land is actually planned, how the sites are laid out.
Scott says that includes keeping water-repellent surfaces away from natural watersheds as much as possible. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn. Talking with Bob Braunstein. He's with the National Institutes of Transition Planning, a longtime HR and benefits type, and he was a retirement officer when he was in his 20s. So that must have been. Do you ever think back and say, "Oh, I did what?
Yeah,
I told
it's pretty
them
scary.
What?"
I show people pictures of the way I look back then.
Yeah.
So did you buy a used car from this
exactly.
man?
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. The checkered shirt and all.
Yep.
But no, it's good to have you here. And this phased retirement is incredibly complicated. Nuke from NASA, the last caller, he mentioned here, and I brought this up during the break. He said he was hoping that his phased retirement would last 2 years. He wants to work for 2 years under phased retirement till he hits age 62. You answered all that question about the difference. But I got in my head somewhere that phased retirement was like a 6-month deal, but you said
I didn't see anything in the Federal Register's provisions that suggested a time frame. And Tammy has written some excellent articles about this in Government Executive Magazine. It really seems to be a deal that's going to be worked out through the agency and the employee. You know, how long the period is pretty much up to the organization that's sponsoring the program.
So there again, it is extremely flexible.
It's open-ended.
Designed to be that way, and it could last 3 years, conceivably longer.
One of the things that might be getting confused here is there was a provision that came out of the Defense Authorization Bill of 2010 that said, all right, if you want to come back to work as a reemployed annuitant, somebody who's retired but you're going to come back to work as an employee, then we won't do that typical reduction of your salary based on the annuity you're getting for a period of what amounts to 3 years on half-time basis. In other words, you can work half-time, 1,000-plus hours, for 3 years, and you won't be subject to that mandatory reduction that most reemployed annuitants are. In other words, their salaries are reduced by the amount of annuity they're receiving, unless they get something called a dual compensation waiver. That has a definite fuse. You know, you can only be on the rolls that way for a three-year period, and then you're ultimately subject to the full reemployed annuitancy reductions.
Okay. And being phased like that, in the defense example, could you work or would you work like a 20-hour week just
probably
every week?
Okay. Or you could work, based on my knowledge, you could work that full 1,000 hours for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd be off for the rest of the year. I think you're limited to a 1,043.5 hours per year.
Yeah.
And you can do that for 3 years.
That would seem to be have less value to the organization simply because you're supposed to be mentoring all along. But maybe, you know, maybe there are cases.
It was probably the initial thought behind it,
yeah,
allowing people to do that, to keep them on board, to keep them close.
Yeah.
I think this makes it a little bit cleaner because you really, you know, and it gives the employee a lot more benefits.
Yeah. Here's one from Pat at the IRS. He says, I've been tracking this closely and have pretty much figured out for me 34 years CSRS service, but one area does remain foggy. One, how does my phased retirement time in service ultimately add to my final pension after I retire from phased retirement? That's part one. Mm-hmm. Example, I leave 12/31/13, that would be the end of this year, with 34 years in service and work phased retirement for 2 years at 20 hours a week. I full-time retire on 12/31/15. I would think that I would gain one percentage point for each year in phased retirement, meaning that my ultimate retirement would increase from 64.25% of my high three to 66.25 of my higher three. So 2 percentage point differential in his high three. Boy, people do.
They do.
Cut it,
yeah,
slice,
you know,
and dice.
That's an excellent way to figure it. That's probably what's going to happen. Now, again, what's really happening is that when you go into phased retirement, without adding sick leave, we figure out what your 34 years are. You get half of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you actually retire, we figure your whole retirement all over again as if it were full-time, and you get half of that. So it winds up effectively giving you a part-time proration for the years that you were in phased retirement. Because when you add the two halves together, it's not as big as the whole would have been had you been full-time the whole time. It's a complex calculation, but he's in essence correct. You're winding up getting about 1% for each of those last years.
And, you know, talking about the difference between 64% of your annuity and 66% of your high three, if you're a high-grade, long-term federal worker, that's a lot of money.
Well, it could be $2,000-$3,000 a year, depending upon what your high three average salary is.
And wasn't that, correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't that one of the sticking points when they were working on phased retirement? Because under the old system, if you were a part-timer, you mm-hmm. got part-time pay. And under this, you would be a part-timer, in effect. You'd still get part-time pay, but they'd make you whole?
Yeah, well, what they basically do is, number one, if let's say something, God forbid, happened to you in this status, your insurance is still figured on a full-time salary,
okay,
not part-time.
Okay.
You're still paying the same full-time employee share of premium for federal employee health benefits, as opposed to mm-hmm. most part-timers who wind up paying a bigger share because they have to pay part of the government share of premium. And when you finally retire, you're made absolutely whole. It's, you know, you understand you're working at half horsepower probably for these last several years, so there's a proration to the annuity, even for CSRSers, for any work after April 7th, 1986. But by and large, you enjoy the benefits of being able to contribute to TSP, probably, as we think, voluntary contributions to CSRS, and gain the same benefit as a full-time employee for the purposes of premium conversion for federal employees' health benefits. You get to pay that on a pre-tax basis. Don't have to increase your share of premium. One of the things that hasn't been answered, to my knowledge, is leave accrual rates. I mean, mm-hmm. are you going to accrue leave at a part-time level, or are you going to accrue leave at full-time rates? I'm not sure about that. The regulations pretty much talk about how we're going to add it at the end. But there are a lot of things that you have. And again, getting back to the questioner, bottom line is that the annuity is a little bit lower. But, you know, you're also enjoying the opportunity of staying with the government, getting almost full pay, doing what the government wants you to do as far as mentoring. But you have that extra time available to you to test the waters outside, go back to school, start another part-time job, start a business. So it's win-win for you as well. Sticking points notwithstanding, it's an opportunity to do what I did without necessarily committing yourself. Because the interesting thing about this that we haven't talked about, Mike, is that you would, if your agency agreed, if you didn't like phased retirement, you'd have one opportunity to come back to full-time work.
Very important.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can only do that one time. You couldn't go back to phased retirement. But that's kind of like, wow, I have a lifeline here. If I really hate this, maybe I can make a deal up front and say, look, I'm going to be a phased retiree, but if I don't like it, will you let me come back and get that ironed out?
And you think that would be impossible, but it's not, because when the buyouts first began in the 1990s, you know, they were $25,000, which was more money than it is now. People took it, said adios, you'll never see me again. They missed it. They needed it. For whatever reason, they wanted to come back.
Right.
And the provisions were they had to repay the entire $25K,
right,
deductions and all.
If they came back within 5 years.
Right. But many of them did that. I mean, they wanted to come back. So obviously, there are people who changed their mind or their circumstances changed. I read an interesting piece about, or a book about Abraham Lincoln the other day, and they were talking about what a really good lawyer he was. You know, he's all over the place on that. It depends on the author. But they said that when he was deciding an issue later on as president, that, like a good lawyer, he would write a brief, a pro and a con. You know, this issue, should we let the South secede, should we not? And he would do a pro and a con. And could you do that with phased retirement? Do you see a pro and a con?
Sure. Well, I see more pro than con. I mean, again, I think when a person is getting ready to leave federal service, they should have in mind something to go to. An idea of what they're going to do for the rest of their lives. It shouldn't just be, you know, I want to leave because I'm tired of doing this, yep, or I don't want to go back and forth. So I think the pros definitely outweigh the cons, because once again, you don't have to absolutely leave. You're maintaining your relationship as an employee. You're getting half retired pay, which is filling the gap, as opposed to being a part-time employee where you'd be reducing your pay unless you had some external source of income. You have all of those benefits that are being paid to you as if you're full-time. With the opportunity to not only assist your organization, but for you, it gives you a chance to slowly go into the next phase of your life. The cons are that when you do the ultimate calculation, it's not going to be quite as big as it was otherwise. But here we have a gentleman who said, I have 34 years of service. I mean, you're looking at 66% plus times the high three. Well, you've already got that. Now you can stick around a little bit longer, enjoy a contribution to TSP at full measure, and experiment and play around. So I don't really see any lose. Mm-hmm. I don't see lose for the government.
I mean, it might be a personal thing. Maybe your wife says, you know what, I can't stand
that's right,
having you 8 hours a day, or vice versa.
So that's a plus. You'll only be there 4 hours
a
day.
Yeah, yeah. A retirement guy told me one time, he said, when you retire, you tell the spouse you get twice the husband and half the income.
Sure.
Got to take a break. Be right back.
Legal mistakes can be costly. Whether it's a business contract or dispute, a family situation or property, Power of Attorney covers all that and more. This Saturday at 10 a.m., join the attorneys from Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman and learn the latest legal developments affecting businesses and individuals. Power of Attorney is sponsored by Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman, a full-service law firm taking pride in working together with our clients, fully invested in their success. Visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
The Advanced Alliance Solutions team, led by Technical and Management Resources, Inc., is a GSA Alliance small business contract holder. Here's President and CEO, Linda Carr.
The Advanced Alliance Solutions team consists of 7 IT firms. Collectively, our core competencies cover all of the functional areas of the Alliance contract and supports agencies' enterprise IT requirements. For potential small business teaming opportunities, please contact us at advancedalliant.com.
To learn more, visit advancedalliant.com.
This week's Experts in Health topic is energy drinks and their associated health risks, featuring Dr. Bruce Awad, a family medicine practitioner with the Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group, who practices at Kaiser Permanente's Falls Church Medical Center.
Many think energy drinks are a safe way to provide more energy, improve performance, and increase concentration. However, it's important to understand the risks associated with these products. First, many energy drinks contain high quantities of caffeine, which may make it difficult to sleep and lead to sleep deprivation. Second, many energy drinks have a high sugar content. This adds calories and may lead to weight gain. And finally, there is limited regulation on these beverages. Some energy drinks are classified as dietary supplements, which are not as strictly regulated as our foods. So before you reach for your next energy drink, remember these risks and keep in mind that water is always a preferred choice.
For more information, visit kpe.org/midatlantic and click Meet Our Doctors.
Today, federal agencies are awash in a sea of data. You have two choices: drift along or harness it. Turn to Deloitte. We help you reveal insights buried deep in your data. With our private sector insights and public sector experience, we'll help you make sense of the what-ifs and what's coming, so you can reduce costs and improve outcomes. See how at Deloitte.com/federal. Wherever you need to go, Deloitte sees you there.
Want to save money on vitamins, herbal remedies, and other healthcare needs? Then visit Village Green Apothecary during the big summer sale now through July 17th. You'll save 30% on the popular Pathway brand nutrition products, 25% off other supplements, and 20% off natural body care products. Visit Village Green at 5415 West Cedar Lane in Bethesda, or shop online at myvillagegreen.com. And be sure to catch their top-notch radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, every Sunday at 10 a.m.
Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Zymogen and Metagenics.
The Awards and Opportunities of Modernizing Federal IT Networks, a panel discussion with experts from government and industry, sponsored by Brocade. And now panelist Anthony Robbins, Vice President of Federal for Brocade, speaking on megatrends.
All the megatrends that are driving the DOD, the civilian agencies, and the intelligence communities, enterprise modernization, all of that happened after the network was constructed and put in place. And so as you move into that environment where the federal government's the largest producer and consumer of data, and you want more users on the edge, you want less data centers and all this complexity, you've got to address the cost of the network infrastructures.
The network is transforming. Join federal IT executives at the 2013 Federal Forum hosted by Brocade as they share their insights and best practices on how to implement and manage federal agency networks of the future. August 6th at the Ronald Reagan Building. Register today for the complimentary Federal Forum at federalforum2013.com.
The second annual Washington Castles Charity Classic is back Thursday, July 18th. Don't miss one of the hottest events of the summer. Senators, congressmen, political leaders, and local celebrities join some of the world's greatest tennis players, including Martina Hingis and other members of the Castles, in a bipartisan world team tennis format match with 100% of the ticket proceeds benefiting charity. For more information, visit WashingtonCastles.com or call 202-4-TENNIS.
Industry and acquisition. One doesn't exist without the other. Get the latest on how the two come together on Federal News Radio. Thursday mornings at 11, listen for AmTower Off Center, a uniquely sideways view of B to G from the marketing perspective. Thursday afternoons at 2, tune into Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron for all things procurement. And Thursdays at 3, join in-depth host Francis Rose for industry chatter about policy, regulations, and trends. Acquisition and Industry, Thursday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is our phased retirement show, and we hope you'll remember it is archived on our homepage, and you can listen to it again. And this is one that I think a lot of people will benefit from hearing more than once. Bob Bronstein is here. He's with the National Institutes of Transition Planning, and he's drawn on the work that they've done and his colleague Tammy Flanagan and the work she's done in Government Executive Magazine. We're going to give you the URLs to those two, that Tammy's articles. But been very interesting to find out how flexible this phased retirement program seems to be. It could be as little as 6 months. It could be as much as 2, even maybe 3 years in it. It seems to be as you said, I asked you to do the pro and the con, and you said there aren't many cons to it as long as you
right.
sort of know what you're doing and know what you want. Is there anything we've left out? I wanted to get to your checklist of things.
I don't think so. At this point, you know, there's still some unknowns. Leave accrual rates while you're in this phased retirement period. You know, I would like to hope that they're at full-time rates. A lot of things are, like the health insurance premium, et cetera. But that's kind of an unknown. I think, you know, maybe the best way to look at this, particularly if you're thinking about it, is that, number one, don't get your hopes up, because it's not an absolute.
Yeah.
Like I say, it's not an entitlement. It's going to be a voluntary scenario. You have to want to do it. Your agency has to want to do it for you. And then, again, just to get down to the basic criteria, you've got to be full-time for the last 3 years, and you have to be eligible now for an immediate retirement. If you're not, if you're just eligible for early out or a minimum retirement age plus 10, or if you're a law enforcement officer or air traffic controller, firefighter, and you have mandatory age retirement, unfortunately, this is not going to be available to you. Now, the things that are important about phased retirement is that you have the opportunity to do it. If you don't like it, again, it's entirely up to your agency. Your agency could technically allow you to come back to full-time work. Now, here's a critical thing, too. Let's assume that, you know, maybe I won't get the opportunity to come back to full-time work. What are the things that I want to do before I go into phased retirement? If you owe any deposits for periods of service that weren't covered by retirement, that were only covered by Social Security, I had jobs like this when I was working for, well, what was then HEW, it's now HHS. Mm-hmm. I was a clerk typist way back in the day. People don't even know what that is anymore.
Yeah.
And it was a FICA-only job, only paying Social Security. Deposits are owed for FICA-only service, for CSRS service, to boost the annuity amount. If you're in FERS and you have deposit service like that, and usually has to be before 1989 to be even able to make a deposit, you got to make deposit for it to count for your annuity and your eligibility to retire. So it's a two-prong thing. The other thing is sometimes people will leave the government, they take a refund of their retirement contributions, and they come back after a service break. They owe the refunded amount plus interest. That's called a redeposit. If you owe deposits or redeposits and you think it's in your best interest to pay them, you've got to have those paid before you go into phased retirement. Otherwise, they wouldn't get paid, and that service would not count either for annuity or eligibility in FERS. And
that's a big deal, isn't it?
It is. Now, again, if you had an opportunity to return to full-time work, and that's not a guarantee either, you could pay them then. If you expired in a phased retirement period like that, your survivors would be able to make those deposit payments. But for you, as far as your ultimate annuity, assuming that you got through a phased period and hadn't made deposits and redeposits that would really help you, then you're out of luck. That's not going to be in your final calculation. So you want to make those up front.
Okay.
So, go ahead.
No, I know you have a checklist there.
The sick leave that you're accruing, and again, we're not sure about what you're going to be accruing when you're in phased retirement, that's ultimately going to be added to your final benefit. In other words, when you are in phased retirement, there's no addition of sick leave. You don't elect survivor benefits or anything like that. All of that happens at the tail end. You ultimately elect the sick leave. Survivor benefits. The sick leave gets added. And it's your ultimate calculation is going to be calculated as if you're retiring from a full-time position. Remember, you've only been working half-time. Should that affect my high three? Well, it really doesn't. The high three is always deemed as a full-time rate. The thing to remember is that when you retired on a phased basis, they figured out what your retirement would be on a full-time basis as of that day and cut that in half, gave you half. Then you went into this phased retirement period, and you're not working at the same level of, quote, horsepower, a term I used before, as you were before. You're working half-time. But when they figure your ultimate benefit, they're going to go back and do this entire retirement calculation again, with survivor benefits being elected, with sick leave that you haven't used being added, and they're going to do it as if you had been employed full-time during this phased period. In other words, none of this happened. Twilight Zone. It's gone. But then that ultimate calculation is going to be cut in half. And then we're going to add this, what is really a larger half, back to the smaller half that you started that didn't have the sick leave, that was for a smaller period of service. And those two periods together will wind up being your benefit. The phased retirement period is sort of treated as part-time service for the annuity computation ultimately. But the math is done kind of in the way that I've said it. It winds up having the effect of part-time service without a lot of the downsides that part-time service can often bring with it, which is, again, higher amounts of premium that you have to pay for your federal employees, health insurance, a whole variety of things that are not on the table. It makes it more favorable and more, something that you'd like to do.
We need to wrap it up here, but it's been a really good show. I hope people will listen again and tell your friends about it. Check out tomorrow's column, my federal report, because we're going to be dealing more with this. We'll have your checklist in there. And I would think, as sort of a parting shot, somebody, by knowing the rules, knowing how this works, knowing the flexibilities, while it's an entitlement, you can't just have it. I think you could sell it. I think you could go into your boss knowing what you have just told us and said, look, this is how it could work. I could be here for 6 months or 3 years. I can train the 7 or 8 different people and get this rolling. So thank you, Bob Bronstein, for being here. We'll have you back on. We'll see you all next week. Have a good week and be careful out there.